With them, translation and purports by Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So is the verse written somewhere? Where's the verse written? Oh, you haven't got the verse? Oh. So? Well, I get to. It's okay. I guess this will be a solo. Oh, well. Putana Loka Bala Gni Rakshasi Rudhira Ashana Jigangsaya Api Haraye Stanam Datwa Apa Sadgatim Putana loka bala gni rakshasi rudirashana jigangsa yapi haraye stananda tapa sadgatin. Anyone else? Okay, I'll do it. I volunteer. Putana loka bala gni rakshasi rudirashana jigangsa yapi haraye stananda tapa sadgatin. There's another verse that Prabhupada places with this. King Punakshadhaya Bhaktya Krishnaya Paramatmane Yakchan Priyatamang King Nu Raktastan Matarojata King Punakshadhaya Bhaktya Krishnaya Paramatmane Yakchan Priyatamang King Nu Raktastan Matarojata. So, translation by Prabhupada. Putana was always hankering for the blood of human children. I guess technically that's non-vegetarian. Putana was always hankering for the blood of human children, and with that desire, she came to kill Krishna. But because she offered her breast to the Lord, she attained the greatest achievement. What then is to be said of those who had natural devotion and affection for Krishna, as mothers who offered him their breast to suck or offered something very dear, as a mother offers something to a child? Prabhupada's purport, Putana had no affection for Krishna. She was envious and wanted to kill him. Nonetheless, because with or without knowledge, she offered her breast, she attained the highest achievement in life. But the offerings of devotees attracted to Krishna in parental love are always sincere. A mother likes to offer something to her child with affection and love. There is no question of envy. So here we can make a comparative study. If Putana could attain such an exalted position in spiritual life by neglectfully, enviously making an offering to Krishna, what is to be said of Mother Jashoda and other gopis who serve Krishna with such great affection and love, offering everything for Krishna's satisfaction? The gopis automatically achieve the highest perfection. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommended the affection of the gopis, either in maternal affection or in conjugal love, as the highest perfection in life. In the Sanskrit, Ramya Kachit Upasana Rajabadhu Vargina Jakalpita, which Prabhupada used to quote often, which means that there is a certain very pleasing worship which was conceived of or executed by the ladies of Braja, Vrajavadhu Vargena. So, Prabhupada Ki Jai. There are many things to say about this verse, so we may just have to skip breakfast. Just kidding. So, here, Bhagavatam says, Putana Lokabala Gni, which means that she was the world's, like, a public child killer. Loka in Sanskrit means world. It can mean a world as in like a physical world, a planet. It also can mean world in the sense of the public. For example, in India, the House of Representatives, or actually it's like the House of Commons. The way they say House of Commons in Sanskrit language is Loka Sabha. The Sabha, the assembly of Loka, the people or the public. So here it said Loka Bala Gni, sort of like a public child killer. Rakshasi, she was a Rakshasi, she was a cannibal. And Rudirashana, blood eater, a blood eater. Nowadays, of course, people call it other things like juice or, you know, in their meat, but it's blood eater. And then Jigangsaya, which means wanting to kill, with a desire to kill, even with a desire to kill, Jigangsaya Api, Haraye, unto Hari, Stanang Datwa, giving her breast, Apa Sadgatim, she achieved a spiritual destination. King Punak, what again, literally like what to speak of, that's how you say what to speak of in Sanskrit. King Punak, what, literally what again. King Punak, Shraddhaya Bhaktya, with faith, Shraddhaya and Bhaktya, with devotion, with bhakti, Krishnaya, Krishnaya Paramatmane, unto Krishna, the Supreme Soul, Yachan, offering Priyatamam, what was most dear. Offering what was most dear. Kingnu. And moreover, Kingnu means moreover, Raktas, they were protected. They were devoted. Raktas, that's what Rakshatas, they were devoted. Raktas. This is actually the past passive participle, as you know, from the same verb from which you get words like rati, love, as in this, the Gurvastaka prayers that rati keli siddhyai. So, and also the word rati and raga is also from this root, and rama, actually the word rama, which means the source of pleasure, the source of pleasure, the source of love. So, Raktas, they were attached to Krishna, Tanmata Rojita, just like his mothers. Just like his mothers. So, we'll start at the top. There's so many points to make here. Putana Lokavala Gni. Now, Putana, how did she do it? She achieved this destination. She achieved this the position as Krishna's mother, and yet she was envious. First of all, of course, this is Leela, and Prabhupada does state many times that it's not by chance that someone gets to appear in Krishna Leela. It's not just like random, like you know, the spin of the roulette wheel or something, that someone just happened to take birth in Krishna Leela and happened to actually touch Krishna's body and see him with their eyes and so on and get liberation. So obviously, Putana was what you could call a, you know, the designated Rakshasi. And she was obviously chosen by Krishna, and she's a very special soul. So otherwise you could say, well, why aren't other people similarly envious and disqualified? Why didn't they take birth in Krishna Leela? And actually Krishna does say in the Bhagavad Gita, Samohang Sarva Bhuteshu, I am equal to all beings. Samohang, sama, we have in English, it's same, sama, same. Samohang, actually, just like Sindhu becomes, they change the S to H and it becomes Hindu. If you change the S in samo to H, you get homo, which is where you get that Greek word, which means the same, as in homogeneous, which in Sanskrit would just be samajati. Anyway, I won't do the linguistics now. So, but Krishna says in the Gita, Samohang sarva bhuteshu. I am equal to all beings. Nam me dveshosti. I have no envy. I have no animosity toward anyone. Nam me priya. I don't favor anyone. So Krishna reciprocates that ye bhajanti tu mang bhaktya. However, those who worship me with devotion, maite, they are in me, te chapyaham, and I am in them. So Krishna perfectly reciprocates. He says, Jijata mam prapadyante. as people surrender to me or as they approach me, actually, then jajata mang prapadyante tangs tataiva. Tata means similarly or like that, tata. But when you add the word eva, tataiva, it actually makes it stronger. It means exactly like that. So Krishna said, and interesting, when Krishna says, I reciprocate, the word he uses in Sanskrit, bhajami, which is, of course, the same word as in Govinda Madhi Purusham Tamahang Bhajami. So Krishna's not saying I worship them, but bhaj, the root bhaj, bhajami, means not only to worship, it means to accept something, to accept someone, to give yourself to someone in a particular way. For example, a typical wedding proposal, the way like kings often pop the question, wedding proposals in Sanskrit, you'll find as they say, for example, they'll say to the lady, the fair maiden, bhajaswa mang bhajantang twam, which means accept me as I am accepting you. And so the word they use for accept is bhaj. It's the same verse, that bhajaswa. So bhaj, anyway, we could go on for an hour about this verb. But so Krishna says, I accept people. And also actually the root meaning of bhaj is to share. Like to share yourself with someone, to give yourself to someone. In that sense, to worship. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna uses this word vibhaga from the same root, bhaga, which means like divisions, like categorically. So it means to share, to give yourself to someone. And so Krishna is actually saying in the Bhagavad Gita that as, and the word prapadyate that Krishna uses is of course the verb pad, which means to go, and from which you get the word pada, the foot, because the foot goes. So the verb is pad, to go, and then pra, which in Sanskrit is something like forth, to go forth. So prapadyate literally means to approach. To approach. And as Prabhupada always said, just as if you approach the sun, you become fire. If you don't want to become fire, you better take another road. But if you approach the sun, you become fire. So if you approach Krishna, you could say, okay, I can do that. I can just walk up to Krishna. But you can't. Because when we approach Krishna, all of our false ego starts to burn off. And if we are attached to our false ego, we turn back. Like, whoa, that's not what I wasn't looking for that. I remember so many people in the early days, they would leave the movement because someone offended them or insulted them. And it's like, I used to think, I guess what they're saying is, I didn't join the Hare Krishna movement to become humbled. Really? And why did you join the Hare Krishna movement? So, as we approach Krishna, we become Krishnaized. And so, the extent to which I'm attached to whatever, I'm attached to my body, I'm attached to being the center of everything. Because everyone, you can be a devotee and still, in your own mind, internally, you live in your own little world in which you're the center of that world. I always say that there's philosophical atheism and there's psychological atheism. Philosophical atheism means, you know, my official position is I think there's no God. Which philosophically is kind of really a dumb position, because if there's no God, then no one knows everything. Because no one's omniscient. If no one knows everything, no one knows if there's a God or not. So atheism is, it's not the best philosophy. But anyway, philosophical atheism means that someone just says, I don't believe in God. Psychological atheism means that even though I believe in God, let's say mentally, but in my practical life, my conscious psychological life, I'm self-centered. Or I see myself as the enjoyer. Actually, Krishna is the enjoyer. Krishna is the center. So even to be self-centered is a type of psychological atheism in which in my mind I take the place of God. Or in the act of trying to enjoy, because I used to give this example. Imagine like some, you know, well, this is, I'm dating myself because nowadays the world's, there's very little decency left. So those of you who were alive back then or have seen movies about the 50s or 60s, imagine, you know, some guy's going on a date. He comes to the girl's house. You know, they sit down together on the couch. And suddenly the father walks in, turns the lights on and says, hi, you young people don't mind me. I'm just going to sit here and read my book. So, you know, game over. So when the lights go on, You can't do nonsense. I mean, why typically do thieves operate at night? Let me think real hard. Maybe because it's dark. So actually, the psychological precondition, to engage in sense gratification or sinful activity is turn the lights out, which means forget Krishna, because you cannot really get into the mood of enjoying sex or this or that or just vanity. You can't really get in the mood unless you turn the lights off. And to turn the lights off means you banish Krishna from your mind, and at least for that time that I'm engaged in sense gratification, I'm living in a psychological world in which I'm the enjoyer and I'm the center. And so, anyway, Krishna says, as you approach me. So, if it's so easy to surrender to Krishna, why not just do it? If you get eternal life, full knowledge, bliss, why not just do it? Because you have to let go of something to grab onto something else. And people aren't willing to let go. They'd rather be a big fish in a little pond. It's a... I'll tell one story. I really want to get back to the specific thing. There's just so much to say, so... But the clock is ticking. I'll tell this one little story. It's a true story, actually, and then I'll get back to this verse here. Well, this is all about the verse, but there was a place called Fort Mims. And I think, actually, it was in the sort of the far western Florida panhandle. And during the great war against the Creek Nation, I was talking about that last night, there was this Andrew Jackson had to lead the U.S. troops because the Creek Nation had declared war, and it's a whole thing where the young warriors murdered all the elders of this Indian nation, which stretched actually from Canada all the way down to practically New Orleans. And so they first attacked Fort Mims, which was like this country club fort. It was like way down near the Gulf Coast, always kind of hot and muggy, and nothing ever happened there. And basically the main job of the soldiers was to just sit around and go on picnics on the riverbank with their girlfriends and wives. And so these scouts came and said that the Creek Indians are coming, and they're coming for war. And they didn't believe it. They thought, come on, you know. And then they got another message. Okay, they're coming in one day. They're coming in half a day. They're coming in 4 hours. They're coming in 1 hour. And they just, I mean, as astonishing as the sound, they didn't take it seriously. And when this Creek army finally arrived, you know, to kill them, they had not even closed the gates of the fort. With days' warning, they hadn't even closed the gates. And the Indians, of course, just rode in and killed them all. And one young man actually dove into the river and escaped and told the whole story. So, but how, I mean, is that more astonishing than people thinking they won't die? Everyone knows we have to die, and yet people, they just, you know, they don't care. They're just waiting for, how can I enjoy? What can I do next? So, as we approach Krishna, he shares himself with us, literally. Bhajamiham. Because whatever Krishna awards us is his energy. Even if Krishna gives you a material boon, as he says in the Gita, mayaiva bhitani tan, whatever material thing we're enjoying is also given by Krishna. So he shares himself with us in that way. Anyway, so here, Putana, the demoness, of course got liberation. But she was a very special person. The reason these kinds of stories in the Bhagavatam, I mean, among many reasons, are the Bhagavatam really goes out of its way to make a certain point to the reader over and over and over again. And Krishna makes the same point in the Gita. And that is, do not misunderstand the fact that Krishna appears to be partisan. That, for example, Krishna takes the side of the Pandavas against the Kurus, or Krishna takes the side of the Devas, the demigods, against the demons. And so it's the nature of politics that as soon as there's a political issue, people get passionate, they get angry, they argue. Even, let's say, some people may be devotees. Chai Prabhu, would you like some more prasadam? Thank you. Would you like some of this? Here, let me give you this flower garland. But bring up politics and I'll be at each other's necks. And so it's just the nature, you know, politics is very passionate and it really brings out this fighting nature in people. And so naturally when you see Krishna politically engaged, when you see Krishna politically engaged, Krishna comes down, he says, Dharma Sangstapanartaya, that Paritranaya Sadunam, to save the good people. And Vinashaya Cha Duskritam, to red card the demons, you know, to destroy or, you know, remove the bad guys. But the bad guys, like 5,000 years ago, they'd taken over the world. They were politically and militarily ruling the world. And so Krishna, after his pastimes in Vrindavan, actually even in Vrindavan, because, you know, killing someone can be interpreted as a political act, especially when the person you kill is an agent of a king. So Putana was a political assassin sent by a political leader. So killing Putana and killing the other medley of asuras that all came to Vrindavan, that was a political statement. And eventually, of course, Krishna went to Vrindavan and personally killed Kamsa. And then after that, of course, then Kamsa's father-in-law, Jarasandha, attacked, and Krishna sort of killed him eventually through an agent, Bhima. So Krishna is... And in the Bhagavatam, so many times, like Krishna will take the side of Indra. When the Bhagavatam emphasizes that when the demons and the demigods churn the milk ocean and produce nectar and all kinds of other prizes, that the demons and demigods both worked equally hard at the same task, and yet the demigods won it all. It's like it was a winner-take-all situation. So is Krishna partial? And this question... We may think it's obvious he's not, but you have to understand that the world is filled. If you look at the ancient world, the so-called pagan world, Persian Empire, the Greco-Roman civilization, anywhere in the world, whether it's Japan or Polynesia, people here in the Americas, the Aztecs, people had this dualistic worldview. They actually believed that there are two competing camps in the world. There's no absolute truth. Prabhupada alludes to this actually in the introduction to the Bhagavatam, where he says that there's a gulf of difference between the conception of God and absolute truth. So they really believe that there's just two different teams fighting each other. And God takes the side of one group, or that group takes God's side. It's just two competing groups. In fact, in the Bible actually accepts that there's many gods. The Old Testament, I mean, later they changed that in later times. Because the first commandment is, you shall have no other gods before me. And as scholars all point out, the first commandment doesn't say there are no other gods. It simply says, get them in the right order. And there are actually other passages in the Old Testament that acknowledge there are other gods, but you have to worship Yahweh. So, and you have these wars. You have these wars where, let's say, even in the Old Testament, where to show that the God of the Israelites is stronger than the God of the Philistines or the worshippers of Baal, they have a battle. And whoever wins, it shows that my God can beat up your God. And so in the ancient world, people were openly partisan and saw their God as openly partisan. They're just different teams. We're on the Zeus team or you're on the Apollo team or whatever. And so in that atmosphere, because Krishna appears in this world at a time when this type of partisan theology is going on. So the Bhagavatam wants to make clear, Krishna is not one of these partisan gods. He's actually equal to everyone. He's the absolute truth. And Krishna emphasizes that himself. He loves everyone equally. Suhridak sarva bhutanam, Krishna says in the Gita. Suhrit literally means good-hearted. Good heart. Prabhupada translates well-wishing friend. We still have this word actually in English. I mean, the pieces of it. Hrit is just heart. Same word. Hrit, heart, same word. And su, we have in English through the Greek as you, as in euphemism or euphony, or which means something good. Eugenics, you means good from Sanskrit su. So Krishna says, I have a good heart. I'm a kind-hearted friend to every living being. Therefore, in his pastimes, unlike, frankly, so many other religious traditions where, for example, God just burns someone forever. Can you imagine eternal torture of your own children for sometimes somewhat subtle theological mistakes? Well, that's the glory of God, that he can burn you forever, like the burning bush that didn't consume itself. So, in other traditions, like the so many religious traditions, ancient times, the enemies of God or the enemies of their God, you know, are simply tortured or killed, and that's the end of the story, man. You know, you're a loser, you're bad, you bet on the wrong horse, now burn, baby, burn. And so, but the Bhagavatam, the Vaishnav culture is so far above that. So Shishupala, liberated. Kongs, you know, liberated. Anyone that Krishna kills is liberated. So Krishna, because he's the loving father, he doesn't torture people forever. He liberates them. He liberates them. So this is a very important theological point that stories like this are trying to bring out. That Krishna is equal to everyone. He loves everyone. He ultimately liberates everyone. And then finally, last point I wanted to make in the short time remaining to me before people start to realize that philosophy is nice, but prasadam is also Krishna. That the gopis are so dear to Krishna, frankly, not because they took some, you know, as they're offered now, some little, ecstatic course in Rasa theology or something, or Raghunuga Bhakti. The gopis were simple cowherd girls. They simply loved Krishna more than anything. And to follow the gopis, a devotee once wrote to Prabhupada. I remember because Prabhupada's answer came to L.A., and I read it. A devotee wrote to Prabhupada and said that Radharani is always trying to bring people to Krishna. She's always trying to bring others to Krishna. So when we go out on Sankirtan and try to bring people to Krishna, is that following in the mood of the gopis? And Prabhupada said, yes. So anyone that goes out to preach, knows the ecstasy that you experience when you're actually talking about Krishna. The realizations you get, the spiritual emotions, that your greatest realizations come, not when you're taking some so-called course in, Madhurya Rasa or something, but your greatest ecstasies come when you're actually doing what Prabhupada wanted you to do and going out to preach. You know, someone wrote a book saying that if you just stay in Vrindavan and chant, you'll save the world. So my question is, if that's true, why did Prabhupada leave Vrindavan to save us? So this is what Krishna wants. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita twice, I'm the father of this world and the mother. It's not only, what is it, patri et filio, father and son, it's also mataji. So Krishna says, I am the father and the mother. He says, of course, the verse Prabhupada used to like to quote that, aham bija pradak pita, I am the seed-giving father. Elsewhere, Krishna says, pitaham asya jagato, I am the father of this world, mata, and the mother, data, the creator, pitamaha, the grandfather. In the 11th chapter, Arjuna says to Krishna, Pitasi lokasya characharasya, you are the father of this world, of all beings. So, the fallen souls are all Krishna's children. So if someone, as Prabhupada used to explain, if you go out and save the lost children of a man or a woman and bring them back to the parents, there's nothing that you could possibly do that would make you more dear to the parents. And that's why Krishna says at the end of the Gita, Jayimang paramang guyam mad bhaktesha vidhasiti, using the future tense, one who will teach this supreme confidential knowledge among the devoted to me. And frankly, as Prabhupada said, I was walking with Prabhupada in Rancho Park one time, and there was this funny, because, you know, we were all young and kind of, you know, young males who we now know that their brains are not fully formed. But we were very sincere. So there was this thing where on Prabhupada's walks all around the world, devotees would try to bring Prabhupada the most shocking, horrible news of the latest deprivation of Kali Yuga. You know, somehow, like, they're just like, Prabhupada, I just heard that in, I don't know, in this country, you know, the priests were eating people's children or something. You know, I mean, that wasn't a real story, but they would really try to bring the most shocking, depraved story they could find. And so, one-to-one brahmachari, we were walking with Prabhupada. He said, Prabhupada, you know, we used to be singing in passion, Prabhupada, because he was doing sankta, you know, the Americans are so demonic, and they're this, and they're that, and actually, Prabhupada stopped him, and he said, no. He said, they're not. They're actually nice people. They're just ignorant. You have to educate them. And so there are actually so many people out there who are good-hearted people. There really are. They're waiting for the Sankirtan party to pick them up. So because as we know, one who goes out to preach in Prabhupada's mission is most dear to Krishna, because there are so many people who are devoted to God in their own way. They simply need this information. And then Krishna says, Yaidang Param Bhakti Mai Parankritwa. Whoever will teach Bhagavad Gita to the sincere, they perform the greatest devotional service to me. If you want to get on Krishna's A list, if you want to be dear to Krishna, if that's actually what you want in life, it's like if everything else fails, read the directions. Krishna is explaining right there in Bhagavad Gita, one who goes out to preach is most dear to me. And ma me vaishati, without doubt that person will come to me. Then Krishna says, nacha tasman manusheshu kaschin me priyakritama. Literally, nobody else, nobody but this person is the most dear to me. No one but this person is, and bhavita nachame bhuya anya prithra, and no one will ever be more dear to me than this person. So, each one has our own, every one of you is born with some special talent. Many of us share the universal devotee talent of overeating, but apart from that universal ability, we all have our specific talent. Actually, Paul says this in a letter in the New Testament, and the word in sort of New Testament Greek that's used for the special gift you have to serve God is charisma. That's actually the Greek word charisma. That's what it originally meant. So each one of us has our charisma. Each one of us has our special ability. And there's nothing more miserable than trying to make yourself happy. And the easiest way to stop suffering is stop trying to enjoy. And as soon as we try to make Krishna happy, water the root of the tree, we become happy. If you are unhappy, if you're in anxiety, if you are not deeply satisfied with your life, stop trying to be happy. And start trying to make Krishna happy. If you're unhappy and therefore you try to make yourself happy, you are being totally faked out by Maya. I don't know if you remember. Do you remember Chick Hearn before you came to L.A.? Announcer for the Lakers. He had one like signature saying. Someone like really got faked out. He'd say, faked him into the popcorn machine. Because, you know, at the side of the court, they have some guy with a popcorn machine. So, so if I'm unhappy and I try to pursue my own pleasure, I was just faked into the popcorn machine. Because if we're unhappy, just stop. Time out in the field and say, how can I make Krishna happy? How can I make other people happy by bringing them to Krishna? And as soon as you start thinking that way, you'll be happy. As I say that a little person cannot have a big problem. It's like if you make a little mark on a deflated balloon, when you blow up the balloon, that little point gets very big. So if you think you have a big problem, it's because you think you're a big person. And if I recognize that, no, I'm actually a little person. I mean, I'm working on that. You know, as an ISKCON guru, I'm working on it. But if I actually understand that I'm a little person, then I can only have little problems. Little people can only have little problems. And the real problem is that the world is going to hell in a, you know, non-devotee handbasket. So if you want to be happy, make Krishna happy. Water the root of the tree. Stop trying to water the leaves and twigs of my innumerable desires. So, and give what's most dear to you. Don't give your... Did you collect baseball cards? I was a serious baseball card collector. My whole neighborhood, it was like serious. It was like the stock exchange on the weekend. People come out with their packs and everything. And I remember that, you know, the serious collectors would trade their doubles, right? Because you wanted to get the complete set of cards. You trade your doubles. Like, okay, I got two of these. I'll trade this one. Don't give your doubles to Krishna. Oh, I didn't really need this. Krishna, my dear Lord. Don't keep the best stuff for yourself. Like, for example, here's an example of one of the really good things. Who gets to be in the center? Is my life really about me and how I can be happy? Piously with Krishna, but my life is about how I can be happy. Or is my life about how to make Krishna happy, how to make Prabhupada happy? Am I giving what's most dear to me to Krishna? Or am I keeping all the good stuff kind of for my own comfort and then whatever I'm not too attached to, I offer? So, am I giving what's most dear to me to Krishna? And everyone has to search their own heart to answer that question. Am I really giving everything to Krishna? Am I really giving myself to Krishna? Atmani Vedana. Am I really giving myself to Krishna? Am I doing everything I possibly can to serve Prabhupada's mission? So, I mean, all of us, you know, I mean, it's just, I'll end with this, so don't fear that this class is never going to end, but when we were young, many of us when we were young, I mean, the younger devotees read about this, you know, the glorious, wild, woolly, somewhat wacky early days of ISKCON. But we were, I mean, nature balances itself. I saw a bumper sticker that said, nature bats last. And so, inevitably, if you go to one extreme, it comes back to the other extreme, and it has to balance. So when we were young, we were extremely, I mean, Prabhupada just totally swept us away. And not because he forced us to, but just we were young, and we just, it became like a mortal sin to in any way think of your own personal health, either physical, emotional, or, you know, to think of your own health meant that you weren't serious about bhakti yoga. And so we again, because of our own youth, we kind of went to extremes of self-abnegation, self-sacrifice. And then you go through a period in your life where you have to balance that. You have to think about yourself and get healthy again, emotionally, physically, in so many ways, relationships. But the point is that... in a mature way, we really have to give ourselves to Krishna. We really have to, you know, we have to be mature and understand ourselves and what our limits are. But in a mature, healthy way, we have to really see ourselves as servant, as a servant. And the right answer to the wrong question is the wrong answer. So if you ask the wrong question, how can I be happy? She loves me not, he loves me not. That, you know, the Maya's Maha Mantra. The real question is, how can I please Prabhupada? How can I make Prabhupada happy? How can I spread this mission? And we should beg Krishna. We should beg Krishna to accept us as his instrument. Everyone can have their Rudolph moment, as I say. You know, then one foggy Christmas Eve, Santa came to say... So you may think, you know, Rudolph with your nose so bright, won't you lead the Sankirtan party tonight? So then one foggy Janmashtami day, Guruji came to say, Prabhu with... Anyway, so... I mean, everyone can have their Rudolph. Every one of us. And Prabhupada gave us that confidence. Prabhupada actually convinced us that any one of us could become Krishna's empowered instrument. He used to say over and over again, Krishna is going to save the world. If you want, you take the credit. You be the instrument. If you won't show up for Krishna, someone else will get the credit. So each one of us has to meditate, pray, beg the deities, empower me, make me your instrument, accept me as your instrument. let me become truly useful to Prabhupada. And then you'll offer Priyatamam, that which is most dear to Krishna. So, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Night?
If Krishna liberates everyone, then what is the benefit of being good or bad?
Well, if you want to suffer terribly for a few million years, there's no difference. I mean, who wants to suffer? It's like saying, okay, the kid says, I'm going to take the stick and beat myself bloody over the head. My mother's going to come and stop me anyway, so I might as well keep hitting myself. You know, it's like... It's not that in the meantime, as I continue to be willfully stupid, that I'm going to have a great life as if I were a devotee.
Well, I just may take it a little bit slower.
Fine, but yeah, everyone goes at their own speed. But what was that old surfer instrumental song, Walk, Don't Run? Remember that? Anyway, so, but the point is, clearly, if someone thinks there's no real problem with my picture, I'm okay, I'm not a devotee, or I'm not really serious, but my life's okay, then what can you say to such a person? You can tell such a person. Actually, George Harrison wrote a song about this, which he called, You Can Lead a Horse to Water, but You Can't Make Him Drink. So if I say to someone, you know, you're trying to enjoy the body, but there are pleasures just fantastically beyond that. If they have no experience, no frame of reference, if they think their material life is fine, you know, it's sort of like a mule that just keeps marching along, what can you say? Therefore, Lord Chaitanya said that it's Yagyar Sankirtana Prayarya Jantahi Sumedhas in this age of Kali, people have good intelligence. People of good intelligence can understand the emptiness, the shallowness of this world. You just keep saying this. It's this world is totally Groundhog Day. And so, you know, if someone doesn't get a higher taste, if someone has a higher taste by associating with devotees, by seeing the deities, by chanting, by taking prasadam, and they realize there's something greater, there's something higher. Then there's some levers to talk to them. Like, you know there's something better. But if they're just sort of still in an animal stage of life, or just very dull.
The problem is that higher taste, it's sometimes a lot of endeavor to get to.
Yes and no. I mean, Prabhupada, it's just like, I mean, think of Ohio State University when Prabhupada was there, you know, chanted and thousands of people were just in ecstasy. So our job for Prabhupada, you know, win, lose, or draw, we got to play our best game. So it's like the Super Bowl, and let's say your team is like, you know, rated, let's say the odds are you're going to lose by 35 points. It's like considered a real mismatch. But you go out and you play your best game. And so every day in the Sankirtan movement is Super Bowl Sunday. And we have to go out there and just do our best to give people that taste, to convince them, to give them prasadam, to get, you know, you just do our best. And if we have the taste, if we as preachers have that taste, if we remember what Prabhupada wanted, who Prabhupada is, who Gaur Nitai really are, what the Sankirtan movement is, if we really recall that, and we have the taste, then we will be detached from the fruits. I mean, all of us, I have to admit myself, the idea that, well, people don't really want this or who's going to accept this, it can be deflating, it can be discouraging. So, like, why bother? Why go to all that trouble? I'm so comfortable now in Krishna consciousness. Krishna's really given me a nice life. Am I really going to upset my own mango cart? And... You know, you want to Veda-size the example, the image. So, am I really going to go to all this trouble again? And for what? I mean, no. That's actually Maya. I mean, I know. I mean, we've all had that experience. We've all had these thoughts. I'm sure I'm not the only sextagenarian who likes being peaceful and comfortable, you know, in ISKCON. You know, I mean, once you get to a certain age, I remember my father worked so hard. It was like, I'm sure your father, he was that was generation, you know, the best generation. Who was that guy who wrote the book? Tom Brokaw. Anyway, my father worked so hard for the family. And when he finally retired, he could just sit all day and he was happy. Like if, let's say like one of my brothers has car in the shop and someone had to go there and kind of, you know, just sit for 2 or 3 hours till the car was done. He'd be happy to do it. I'm like, Dad, are you sure you don't mind? No, happy to do it. He just sit there with a big smile on his face, just happy. Just sit there, just the fact that he wasn't working. And actually, even, you know, and when you get to a certain age, you want to be with your family, your friends. Prabhupada used to always say this. Prabhupada used to always say about his going on the Jaladutta, at that age, no one leaves home. No one leaves home at that age. Everyone wants to be with their, you know, as you get older, family is so important, and your friends, and just being comfortable, and just being peaceful, and that's what you want. I mean, it's biological. There's different biological stages of life. It's just like there is, not only the Varna system is natural, as Prabhupada always said, the four Varnas, but the ashram system is natural. There's a certain stage of life where you want to study. There's a stage in life where a man wants to be with a woman, or a woman with a man, or children. It's just biological. And there's a stage when the children are grown. And I mean, because I hear this all the time, because I counsel so many devotees that, typical thing, devotee will say, yeah, you know, I'm past this sex thing. I don't want, you know, I'm not trying to enjoy sex. But I just don't want to be alone. I don't want to grow old alone. I want a companion in life. Ding, vanaprastha. So it's like, it's actually, we're wired for that. It's like, that's sort of like your bio, your little inner vanaprastha, you know, crying for attention. And even if, you know, whether you're a sannyasi or a brahmachari, a householder, whether you're a man or a woman or a guru, this or that, there are certain universal things that everyone goes through. If you're more advanced in Krishna consciousness or maybe strong in renunciation, it doesn't affect you that much. It's like weather. If you're in a huge jumbo jet, you go through turbulence, you know, because the plane is so big, it doesn't shake so much. If you're in a little, like, you know, to like one engine Cessna or something, you know, you're going to be like thrown all over the sky. But everyone feels it. And so even if you're a sannyasi, I mean, everyone goes through the same biological stages of life. And so we get to a certain stage in life where you just want to be happy and peaceful. So at our age, you know, I'm speaking of myself, I mean, I'm over 40 now. So what do they say? Never ask a woman or a sannyasi their age. Even Prabhupada felt it. Even Prabhupada felt it. Of course, it had no effect. It was like bullets bouncing off Superman's chest. But Prabhupada was aware of these things. He said, at this age, no one wants to leave home. He didn't say no one but me. He said, no one wants to leave home. But of course, Prabhupada is a pure devotee. He's Krishna's warrior. He went out and did it like no one else could do it. So even those of us who are a little older, we've got to get back out on the battlefield. And you can say, well, I'm already preaching my own way. Okay. But is that really the battlefield? So all of us, we have to really do what Prabhupada did. At the age when you want to settle down, you want to be peaceful, we've got to do more. We've got to preach more. We've got to just put ourselves at risk. I mean, imagine myself. You know, it's like by not going out there, I could never be embarrassed like he went out there. And, oh, my God, even Rita Ananda Maharaj kind of flopped at that. So, you know, there's some security in not putting yourself in risky situations because then you won't embarrass yourself. But somehow or other, even though it's difficult now, we've got to get out there. We've got to get out there and just really get that spirit again. I mean, I don't mean to say that no one's got the spirit. Obviously, everyone here is serving Krishna. Everyone here is preaching. Everyone is, you know, doing. If everyone in the world did what the devotees in this room are doing, you know, this world would be the spiritual world. So I'm not saying that no one's doing anything. But maybe we can do, you know, really be a little more adventurous and bold. All of us. Certainly, I include myself. Yes. blonde, brunette, black hair. They're spiritual bodies. They're not made out of matter. They're not made out of... But you see, spirit is an energy. It's a real energy. It has color. It has texture. It has shape. Actually, matter, just dead matter, is just a perverted reflection of the real... I don't want to say matter, but the real substance. So spiritual bodies, they're... You know, like Angani, Jasya, Sakalendriya, like Krishna's body, one limb can perform the functions of all the other limbs. They're beautiful. They're gorgeous. And... You know, I suppose they don't, you know, burp, hiccup, or, you know, do other even worse things. So they're just beautiful eternal bodies. And in the spiritual world, you are your body. I mean, you can imagine, like, in the spiritual world, someone going to someone and saying, "Remember, Prabhu, you're not your body." So in the spiritual world, you are your body because your spiritual body is just the flowering of your love for Krishna. Someone has the body of Yashoda or of a mother of Krishna or a father or of a friend or a gopi because that is the form, that is the visible form of their love for Krishna. So many devotees have this sort of like this silly anxiety, like, what if I get to the spiritual world and I don't really like my spiritual body, but I don't want to, like, what if I'm a chipmunk and but I don't want to go back to the material world and I have to spend all eternity as a liberated chipmunk or something. So in the spiritual world, there's no anxiety. Don't worry. You know, you won't have to ask for a refund or trade in or something. Everyone, I mean, you'll be completely satisfied. Krishna will give you exactly what you want. So we'll end here. Last question, ladies. Well, obviously she's a special soul. I mean, to touch Krishna's body. I mean, she got liberation. Krishna doesn't throw away liberation. And Krishna says, "I'm equal to everyone." So if he gave liberation to someone who totally didn't deserve it, how could he say, "I'm equal to everyone"? So clearly, Putana is a special soul who played that role. So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.